This says, what does the Islam teach about Christians and Muslim-Christian relations?
So again, I'll start with Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, which is in the name of God, the most merciful, the most compassionate. We like to always start anything that we do in our lives starting with the name of God. Islamic view on Christianity and Christians is that they are from the people of the book. They are from Ahlul Kitab. So Ahlul Kitab are the closest in faith towards Muslims. And Muslims believe that that Islam is the teaching of basically believing in God, and that those who went astray from the path, that God would send messengers over time to remind people of this, the monotheism, the creator, the God who created the heavens and the earth, you and me and everything in between. And the Christianity, basically what I want to say is, we believe that Christians are our brothers in humanity. There are so many similarities between us and the Christian faith. There's a verse in the Quran that talks about, you will find those closest in faith to you, to the Muslims, those who call themselves Christians, those who are Christians. That is because from among them, there are those who are devout, and there are monks, and there are priests, and that is because they do not have arrogance. This is one of the verses in the Quran. And Muslims believe in a lot of the similar things that Christians believe in. We believe in Jesus, that he was a messenger sent from God, that he was born a virgin birth, that he was born of the Virgin Mary. My daughter's name is Maryam because of the Virgin Mary. If you do not believe in Jesus as a messenger of God, you cannot consider yourself Muslim. If you do not believe in the virgin birth of Mary, you cannot consider yourself Muslim. Muslims believe in the Gospels, and they believe in the Torah, the Old Testament, and they believe in the other holy books that God came down in their original form. So Muslims throughout history have lived with Christian society, have lived in peace, have respected, you know, the rights and the religions of Christianity. And if I may, I can just share one small story. Please. I'm sure everyone here has heard of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, of course, which is located where? In Jerusalem. Yes. So after the death of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and we believe that Muhammad was the final prophet sent to mankind. After Jesus came Muhammad. He was the seal of the prophets, and that after him there will be no more prophets that come, but that he says that he was the brother of Jesus and the brother of the other prophets that were also sent as messengers to mankind, preaching them to worship the Creator. When he passed away, there were the Khalifas that came after her, which was the rightly guided leaders that came after him. That is the time in which Jerusalem was conquered by the Muslims. So they wanted to hand over the keys to the Muslims, but they said, no, we'll hand it over to Umar, who at that time was Omar, and he was in Medina. So they wanted to hand over the keys, but to your leader. So he didn't come with his big entourage. He was a humble man. He was an aesthetic man, and ascetic. And he came on one camel with his servant, and they would take turns riding the camel. He would ride on top, and the boy would leave, and the boy would ride on top, and he would leave. And when they reached the gates of Jerusalem, one of the army commanders said that, you know, the people look at how you dress, and they look if, you know, you're riding the camel or not. Maybe you should ride the camel. He said, no, we are a just faith. We are a humble faith. So he walked in Jerusalem in this manner. And when he was asked, when he was turning over the keys in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, it was time to pray. So he decided that he does not want to pray in the church, fearing that maybe those that came after him would turn it into a mosque. So he prayed in another area outside of the church, which was later turned into a mosque, which is the Mosque of Umar at this time, which can still be prayed in. And there was a direct declaration, the Declaration of Jerusalem, which stated basically the following, and this was the declaration. From the leader of the Muslims to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, you will have safety and protection under the city or the empire under the Muslims. Anyone who has land may keep that land and can do whatever they want with that land. Anyone who is a citizen or a resident of Jerusalem will have our protection and will have the full rights that they may have. No one can kill any non-Muslim. No one can destroy the churches of the non-Muslim. If anyone would like to leave Jerusalem, they will have our protection until the outskirts of Jerusalem. So this is one of the wathiqas or plaques or agreements from Umar to the people of Jerusalem. And for these reasons and many other reasons, we can talk about Andalus and other things, the rights of Jews and Christians, especially the people of the book, like for instance, Muslims, have you heard of kosher meat? Muslims have a dietary way that they are humane to animals and eat, cut the animal and sacrifice the animal a certain way, right? And that's called halal. But we also eat because of our brotherhood with the Christian and the Jewish faith. We also eat from the meat of the people of the book as well. So there are a lot of similarities. We see them as brothers in humanity and the closest in faith to us as well. And that's kind of the short answer. Short, long answer.
That was very good. Rick, do you have anything to add to that?
Just a couple things. I want to note that the verse he quoted says Christians are nearest in affection, or then he says, and they are not arrogant. So I think it's significant that Christians are portrayed as humble in the Quran. Would that that be the case? Also, there's a great verse, and he doesn't want to just preach here too much because there's so many questions, but there's one verse in the Quran that says he sent Jesus in the gospel, and he put in the hearts of Jesus' followers compassion and mercy. And I think, wow, humility, compassion, and mercy. May that be reflected in our lives.
So, Rick, most Americans fear Muslims. So how should we address the problem of fear?
This is a big issue, I know. And so let me just summarize, I think, in three ways. We can overcome fear with our faith, with facts, and with friendship. And here's what I mean. First of all, our faith. You know that the Bible teaches perfect fear casts out love. Is that what it teaches? No, what does it teach? Perfect love casts out fear. But it seems like the inverse is true. With all the fear-mongering, there are a lot of Christians that are not loving their Muslim neighbor, are not loving people around them, and they're walking in fear. There's another verse that says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and discipline. The media is filled with fear lots, and the Bible's filled with fear nots. You know, one of the greatest, most frequent commands in the Bible is to fear not. So I think looking at our faith seriously should address the issue of faith. But the next thing would be facts. We need to learn to love God with our mind. There is so much propaganda. You need to know that there are organizations that have spent well over $40 million spreading Islamophobia and trying to stir up hatred and fear toward Muslims. There's a whole industry doing that. But in terms of loving God with your mind and trying to deal with facts, let me just say a few things about Muslims, and this is hard with an imam here, but I think it's important to see the diversity of Islam. Muslims are made up of two big groups, Sunni and Shia. There are five major categories maybe of Islam where you could say they're secularists, who don't even believe, but they have the name Muslim. They're modernists, who think kind of West is best. There's a large group of traditionalists who want to apply Islam and to their lives today. Then there's fundamentalists and then terrorists or extremists.
Sounds a lot like Christians.
Well, the reality is Christians are radically diverse, but there's a core. Muslims are radically diverse. There's eight schools of law that are accepted in Islam. There's 2,000 different ethnic groups. Have you ever noticed that every ethnic group reflects its faith differently? I mean, that's the case. I can go on and on, but the reason this is significant is because fearmongers paint Muslims in, like they're all the same, monolithic, and they're terrorists. And so let's love God with our mind and analyze the reality, the facts of Islam, and recognize the vast majority of Muslims are just like, the vast majority are just like you and me, want to be faithful to God, want their kids to grow up in a safe environment. So that's significant. So let's look at our faith as we address fear. Let's deal with facts. And lastly, friendship. When especially on Facebook, because I'm a peacemaker, always getting Christians and Muslims together, I get a lot of flack, you know, with what I do, etc. And I always ask these people, I say, have you ever met a Muslim or do you have a Muslim friend? And they go, no. And they don't like Muslims. They're angry. They're fearful. And so you want to deal with fear, meet a Muslim. Reach out, build a friendship. Faith, facts, friendship.
It's really, really good. Imam, do you want to add anything to that?
The question is basically fear. So, I mean, I think the main thing is just getting to know a Muslim. And as a Muslim growing up in our society these days, I realize that a lot of times our country has a history of kind of picking on someone at that time. So you know, the people who say that, well, all the Muslims have to go back home or all the whoever's have to go back home, well, all of us came from somewhere. So it's not like, so my dad came in the 70s, but your dad's came in the 1870s, okay, so, yeah. Or the 1770s. Yeah. It doesn't go much farther back than that. So we're talking 250 years maximum. You know, when the Jews came, when the Polish came, when the Germans came, when the Italians came, when the Irish came, they all had their time under oppression, right? Then we had to go, you know, throw the Japanese because we had that fear. And then we said, okay, never again with Nazi Germany. And then we said, okay, well, now we got to find the commies. And then we had the civil rights movement, let alone talk about the Native Americans. And, you know, on and on and on. So it is a pattern. It is a cycle, right? But so as a wise Muslim community member, I should acknowledge that, but at the same time do my best to do outreach and go visit churches and invite people to our mosque. And we have an open house once a month and, you know, things like that. Welcome people, you know, talk about the things that we agree upon to establish that trust, to build that relationship, eat food together, and then we can get into, you know, any things that we may disagree upon and then agree to disagree, you know, if it comes down to that. But really just the fear is getting to know each other.
So you want to get into it right now? Let's do something. Here we go. Here's a question for you. He said he saw some of these questions, went, you gotta try harder. Okay, so let's go for it. Here we go. So some say Islam is a religion of peace. Others that it's a religion of violence. What do you say?
So the word Islam means submission, and it also means peace. But the word Islam means submitting yourself wholly and fully to the Creator. Meaning that when I realize that I'm either Creator or creation, if I realize that I'm in the category of creation, then I have my limitations and I have my reasons that I was created on this earth. And if I submit to that, then that is going to allow me to be successful personally with my family, with my relationship with God, with my relationship with everyone else around me, and it will enable me to be successful in the life to come as well. So Islam literally means submission to God. And through that submission to God, I can attain inner peace. So Islam is a peaceful religion. It is a religion of God. And Muslims believe that let's just address reasons why people may think that it's a violent religion. So we can think that maybe it's a violent religion because of the things that we're seeing in the media. We can maybe look at some verses in the Quran that maybe look violent at the outlook of it. We can look at other things that say, okay, that this is a violent religion. A lot of the verses that maybe be looked at the Quran can be found in the Bible as well. So an eye for an eye, an ear for an ear, a tooth for a tooth, similarly. But I cannot take this legislation from the Bible that was revealed in Aramaic, for instance, and then Latin, and then Greek, for instance, and then just go ahead and look at this verse and read it in English and go apply and do some criminal law on people and say, I'm applying God's justice on earth, right? Similarly, extremists cannot take verses from the Quran and go in a classical Arabic text and go apply that, right? Similarly, you know, even Muslims here who are not Arabic Muslims or non-Muslims who don't speak Arabic cannot look at verses and say, oh, look at this, you know, verse in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So reasons why people may think that it's a violent religion, we could talk about each one of those things, but Islam in its core, in its essence, is the submission to God and attaining peace through that submission, and giving the rights to those individuals who need to have them. So for instance, Islamic legal scholars are the ones who would issue fatwas, legal rulings, legal doctrine. And that's not for you and me or ISIS or Qaeda or any of these layman people that have some sort of agenda to achieve, and they go pick out any verse from the Quran willy-nilly and say, we're going to do this. But that Islamic orthodoxy, similarly to Christianity and Christian orthodoxy, you have to go to Bible school, you have to study Latin, you have to study the Aramaic, you have to know what does the maybe different scriptures say, what have scholars over a period of thousands of years say in regarding to this verse. So similarly, I would say the same thing with Islam, is that Islam is a peaceful religion, and those try to pervert it or twist it or interpret it in different ways, unfortunately, are getting the time on air, as opposed to the vast majority of the 1.7 billion Muslims who are not acting in this way, which leads us to the result that it's not something from the faith.
Rick, do you want to add anything?
When you say, if you just analyze... And hear me out here. Don't get too fired up quickly here. If you analyze the Islamic faith empirically, there are great periods of peace. There's conflict. And guess what? If you analyze the history of Christianity, there are great periods of peace, and there's a lot of conflict. So we're going to continue to talk a little bit about conflict and violence in the next... Thank you. The next question or two, but just a reminder, you know, Jesus said we need to get the log out of our own eye before we look at the speck in someone else's. And so as we think of other people of other religions or anyone else, our spouse, our kids, we need to start with humility. And I think recognizing that violence has characterized some of the history of Christianity as well will keep us humble. And I think the reason that Peace Catalyst was birthed is because we want to find those Muslims that will work with us for the sake of peace. And that's why I'm here. And I think that's why Imam Shamsuddin is here.
So, Imam, let's ask a real direct question that I'm sure you've never been asked before. Yeah, I know you are. That's why I'm joking. There are passages in the Quran that are positive about Christians. So you mentioned some of those. And then there's verses that command Muslims to kill all non-Muslims. So how should we understand these violent passages?
So again, we're talking about a text that is a classical Arabic text that is similar in other ways far more difficult to understand than Shakespearean, for instance, English, Old English, right? So I always give the example of constitutional law written by Thomas Jefferson and the likes that is written in a certain legal form, that is written in a certain way. And that in order to understand that law, not only do I have to understand the style of English, the language that was written at that time, I have to understand implications of this law, how that's applied, all these types of things. I have to go to legal school to understand these types of things. So, for instance, Quranic verses, there are some verses that talk about If you read them, فَقُتُلُوهُمْ حَيْثُ وَجَدْتُهُمُهُمْ, you know, and fight them or kill them wherever you were, they were to be found. A lot of times what has to happen is, first of all, I'm reading a translation of this classical Arabic, right? The scholars of Islam on this one verse themselves, who are scholars of Arabic, will differ, right? There will be 5 or 6 different exegesis of this particular verse. Each one will come with its own benefit and what's understood from this verse. For me to come and read that in English and say, this is this and this is violent, what I have to do, first of all, is understand the context in which this was revealed. Was this revealed over the 22 period in which revelation came to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? Was this revealed during a time of battle? Was this revealed during a time of peace? Was this revealed for as something that was a lesson for all people, all Muslims? By the way, whenever you live and you find a non-Muslim, kill them. Or was this revealed for a specific group of people, for instance, in this particular verse, that were those who were enemies of the state, enemy combatants, that the Prophet Muhammad had a peace treaty with the combatants of this city. And what they did is they actually, what's it called, treason?
Yeah.
So for Edward Snowden, for instance, we're trying to get a hold of Edward Snowden because he leaked secrets that are against national security, for instance. These are individuals who, when the Muslim community was at its weakest and was surrounded by those Arab tribes that were trying to wipe out the Muslim community, those people who they had made peace treaties with inside of the Muslim community then showed their true face and then came out and said, we are now going to be the Edward Snowdens, for instance, or whoever, you know, we want to take the example, and committed treason and fought those Muslims from the inside. I have to understand context. I have to understand place and revelation and where that is applicable to that. So that is my short answer, but we could go through specific verses and look at that exegesis. And you know.
And for those of us who maybe aren't a part of our church or have a Christian background, surely we would concede that many people misuse or confuse scriptures that we hold dear for the sake of violence, discrimination, racism, and have done so historically. So at least we should be as gracious with our friends as we are with ourselves in the way that we see the interpretation of scripture.
I'd like to add one thing.
I would like you to add one thing.
I want to underscore the importance of context. This is basic interpretation, all faith, all documents. And you need to understand when these verses that talk about kill them, that is in the context of war. I believe a few years ago, our president said, those who are not with us are against us. You know, it was very clear in a war context. So many people, the fear-mongers, quote verses like that and say, this is the essence of Islam, and that they take it out of context. Do you want people to take verses of the Bible out of context and use it against us? I don't think so. And so let's honor them. And one of the greatest things, you know, Jesus said, do unto others, to listen, say, okay, what is the context? And we just heard the context is the context of treason and war, those violent passages. So thank you, Shimon.
Okay, so Imam, one more for you. I like the way this is said the way someone would ask it. I'm not asking. Here it is. Why don't more devout mainstream Muslims speak out against terrorism and violent extremism?
Good. So I get this question a lot. Where are the Muslim voices? So I would say, okay, where are you listening? And where are you looking? So are you looking for these mainstream Muslim voices on Fox News, on Nine News, on CNN? Where are you looking exactly? Because we just established that the first 10 minutes is trying to grab your attention with the most provocative thing out there, right? So whatever that is where it's going to... But if you do a quick, easy Google search, for instance, I got a calls from all over the state from Nine News and after the Paris attacks. And one of the brothers, he sent me a Reddit feed about all of the condemnations of Paris attacks, of the Paris attack from around the Muslim world. So it goes through Europe, the Grand Mosque of Paris, Hassan Chaghloumi, Imam of the Drancy Mosque in Paris, the Union of Islamic Organizations of France, the French Muslim Council, the Muslim Council of Britain in North America, ISNA, ICNA, CARE, National Council of Canadian Muslims, the Pakistani leaders from all parties, Saudi Arabia, who we always look at as the most conservative, right? The heinous Paris attacks are a violation of all religions and underline the need to intensify efforts against terrorism, etc., etc. Iran, right? All Iranian political parties have issued condemnations, right? The axis of terror, that was North Korea, Iran, and who else? Okay. Egypt, Egyptian Prince Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, Indonesia, Maldives, UAE, Iraq. So we can go down the list. So where are you Muslims, right? Why aren't you? Well, on every single attack, first thing that Muslims do is pray to God that it's not a Muslim, right? Number two, we immediately issue a press release as the Colorado Imam Council. The press release, because we don't feel like it's representative of Islam. And it's like, man, we're tired of defending ourselves, but these things are going on. So we also have a responsibility to share with those individuals who may not have heard our condemnations yet that, no, we do not stand with this. We say the verses that go against killing life in Islam, protecting the innocent, protecting non-combatants, that these people are doing things for, and I think that's the next question, but the reasons why they're doing this and why they don't represent Islam. So the Muslim voices are out there. They are doing that. But yes, we can do a better job. Yes, we're trying to reach out to the churches. Yes, we're trying to work with Dr. Love. And yes, we're trying to do things. So be patient with us. Get to know a Muslim. And that's really what we can do. Because as the masses start to know Muslims and start to understand each other, then that voice of the masses will be louder than the voice of the media, right? And that is where the change will occur.
It's very good. It's really, really important. Rick, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to add that this happens so... Just recently, I was with Sheikh Yaqubi from Syria, and it was so stunning to hear this sheikh speak against ISIS and condemn them to hell. And then he's written... He's written one book on it, and he says, Rick, I have a better book, you know, that's coming out soon. So these scholars are speaking out.
So if, just so we can banter a little, if it's that clear, why is it that so many Muslims, do you think, are joining ISIS and other extremist groups?
So define for me so many Muslims. So we'll talk about Pew Research now. Pew Research.
Facts.
So Pew Research says, we said, how many Muslims are there around the world? How many, you guys tell me? 1.7 billion, so 25% of humanity, 1 in 5 or 1 in 4, along with Christianity, 50%. So 1.7, so New York Times article tries to get some sort of statistics with regards to number of terrorist Muslims around the world. They come up with about 120,000 combatants, fighters, that, you know, Al-Qaeda guys, ISIS guys, Daesh guys. If we say like 200,000 of those, then we're talking about 0.00050 zeros or six zeros, 1% of 1.7 billion, which is nil, which is next to nothing. So all Muslims are terrorists. That has been now debunked. Okay, but all terrorists are Muslims because all the terrorism that we're seeing is basically all from Muslims. So all terrorists are Muslims. So go back to Pew Research and look at the statistics over the last 10 to 15 years of the FBI or CIA fact book definition of terrorism in Europe, in North America, and Muslims account for less than 5 or less than 3% of all, you know, terrorist crimes that have happened over the last 10 to 15 years. So why is the focus or the understanding, you know, by the media to the masses that, you know, Islam, terrorism, Islam equals terrorism. So there's reasons behind that, and maybe it's just the new boogeyman, or maybe there's other reasons. But those are the facts. And I just would say that basically if this was something that was, okay, so what are the reasons they're joining?
Yeah.
So 200,000, for instance, why are there people from the Middle East, from England, from North America joining? There was a woman, a British woman, that did a study that she was able to speak with about 100 to maybe 120 ISIS combatants that were either in jail or I don't know how she got a hold of them. Official British study. And she looked at the three reasons of why they joined. Number one, isolation. So they felt isolated from their own societies, wherever they may be. And they felt alienation. Number two, alienated, that they were not part and parcel of some sort of community or of the country themselves. Number three, when she asked them about basic Islamic understandings or principles, they were, on the most part, unaware of these Islamic understandings or principles. There was the Emir of Qatar that came to George Washington University last year and talked about his thoughts about why people are joining these groups. He said the loss of hope. So when a young man loses hope on every asset of his life, every facet of his life, he will turn to something else. So a lot of these countries are ravaged by war, economic instability. They've seen family members that have been killed, maybe whole villages wiped out. Maybe they haven't had any of these, but they're an opportunist. So if I go join ISIS, they control the oil wells in Mosul, and I can get rich quick, or they can look for some other base desire that they're looking to implement. But does that mean that they're following a religion of God? That doesn't mean that they're following a religion of God. And it also doesn't mean that they are representative of any significant percentage of the Muslim population around the world either.
P-E-W, like a church pew. Yeah.
So what is the role? So for instance, people say, okay, well, the mosques now, they're these incubators of terrorism. The mosques are the incubators of terrorism, and we have to go save the youth, right? So we say that the mosques actually in America are the best friends of law enforcement and of the community, because typically we said alienation, isolation, these individuals are not hanging out at mosques. They're usually getting indoctrinated behind Twitter, behind screens. Even a lot of times their parents aren't aware, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that we can do as a community, as families. There's a lot of responsibility on parents as well. But the guy in San Bernardino, he was not an active member of the Muslim community. These guys would get called out and ostracized, and they know they wouldn't find support within the Muslim community if they came out with these ideas. At the same time, there are programs by law enforcement, by different agencies, that can be unhelpful as well. So, for instance, if we're doing entrapment, or we're putting moles into mosques and Muslim communities, get a guy out there with a big beard and say, I'm a Muslim, I'm your new Muslim brother. And then what this has been documented in Los Angeles and different places in Southern California, that this individual, is an informant, working with the FBI or working with other security agencies, and will say provocative things to see who catches on, to see who gets hooked, and see that, okay, yeah, we're going to do. So he would go out and say, we're going to do something. And the guy's looking around like, what are you talking about, right? And he's like, because the community is not about that. Who is a majority or a majority percentage of people that are being killed by ISIS? Yeah. It's Muslims.
Yeah.
It's not Westerners or foreigners or things like that. It's Muslims, right? So we have just as much an investment to participate with others on an education and ignorance level or on a law enforcement level to do our best to work to stamp out this type of understanding or ideology.
It's very good. So you can have, I'd like for you to have the final word just to share what you would want to share to a church, because that's what a lot of these people are.
I would say that, first of all, we have actually had a lot of churches and community members actually coming and visiting the mosques. Number two, I heard this phrase as far as being Christ-like or following the path of Jesus, right? Which is a path of peace, a path of turning the other cheek. And that is a similar belief that we believe as far as Muslims. We try to follow Jesus as well, just like we try to follow the other prophets and messengers that God sent down. Jesus is one of the five most important prophets. Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad is the top messengers as far as Muslim faith that was sent to mankind. And this is a strong example that we look towards as far as how to lead our lives. So we would say that groups who, for instance, I think hopefully we can agree that the KKK, who maybe claim to following Christianity, are not very Christ-like. Or we can say that those individuals who, for instance, Anders Breivik, who in 2011 went to a camp in Norway and killed 70 individuals and had some you know, a perverted idea of Christianity or white supremacy wanting to spread that across Europe was not acting Christ-like. So you here as individuals who, you know, are doing your best to follow Christ, when these things happen, do you feel some sort of responsibility as a Christian to stand up and defend all of Christendom and say that this does not represent all of Christendom, that this is some perverted ideology, right? So similarly, Muslims, we don't feel like we have to stand up for all of Islam and 1400 years of history and working together and cooperation and scholarship and advancement to the sciences, that we have to defend all of Islam, right? But like we said, that is just the situation. So we will do our best. But work with us, understand us, know that we also seek peace and we seek love and we seek friendship with you all. We may not agree on everything, but 95% of the things we will come to agreement upon, and we will say, these are the things we can work on together. And let's not disagree and say we're not going to be friends because there's 5% of the things we're going to disagree upon. But the 95 that we agree upon, let's see how we can put our hands together and work together for the better of our communities and our societies. And that's what we want, just as much as you want. So thank you again for having us, and God bless you and guide myself and